Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to The Corbett Report. I am James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, coming to you with another edition of Solutions Watch here in October of 2025. But if you could cast your mind back all the way back to August of 2012, over 13 years ago, you'll remember Corbett Report Radio number 193, where I talked about the thorium solution with John Kutch. Or maybe you don't remember that conversation. Anyway, I'll link it in the show notes if you want to take a listen to it. But if you didn't listen to it or you don't remember it, don't worry. We're going to talk about the thorium solution with John Kutch. Specifically, John Kutch is of the Thorium Energy Alliance at thoriumenergyalliance.com. So let's bring him on the program. John, thank you very much for taking the time today.
That last report was written on clay tablets, correct? In cuneiform?
I think it was smoke signals, but yeah, you get the point.
Yeah, that's why it's ephemeral, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that we have a chance to get to catch up after all this time. A lot of things have... it's actually interesting. You know, some things haven't changed at all, and a lot of things, but there's been a tremendous amount of movement lately. So that's great.
Well, let's talk about that. But first, specifically, since I'm sure there is some percentage of the audience who might not have caught our original conversation, why don't you bring us up to speed on who John Kutch is and what the Thorium Energy Alliance is?
I'm John Kutch. I started the Thorium Energy Alliance with several other people back in 2007. And Thorium Energy Alliance came out of I run an engineering firm. I still run it. And we had a client back then that's, basically said, hey, can we use thorium? Well, it turns out he was just running through the periodic table. It was kind of like, fine. I'm like, are you just reading things from the periodic table? Turns out he was. But I still looked into thorium and I thought, wow, this is a really big missed opportunity. And so there was a start of people trying to get back into making thorium a critical material, an ingredient in advanced nuclear fuels, a preferred fuel for advanced reactors like molten salt reactors and lead-cooled reactors and sodium and all the Gen 4 reactors as they're known. So I just, as I said, I thought it was a real missed opportunity. And the reason it was a missed opportunity is thorium is a very unusual material. It has characteristics of a rare earth material. It's right below cerium in the periodic table. So whatever you can use cerium for, catalysts, rare earth properties, you could use thorium for, and it's much more enhanced. Thorium is a big fat atom. It's 90 in the periodic table. So it's got lots and lots of electrons to give up. Very readily. So the microwave in your kitchen almost for sure uses a thoriated magnetron. The radar in the plane you fly or the radar used by the airport you fly from has magnetrons with thorium. If you need something welded, they often use 1-4% thorium in the welding rods that they weld, especially high nickel, very difficult to weld materials. So there's a pattern there, and the other properties of thorium present themselves as a refractory metal, so it's an incredibly high heat metal. The other properties are as almost a platinum group, so it's a very strong, very reactive metal, kind of like platinum, so it can act as a catalyst. So, it just sounds like this, it's the most bizarre element in the periodic table, I would argue. There's probably some other really oddball ones, but as far as bizarre element that we know really very little about, and also it's incredibly plentiful. It's far more plentiful than uranium. It's far more plentiful than usable uranium because the only usable uranium is uranium-235. And there's probably twice as much thorium on planet Earth than gold. There's more thorium on planet Earth than there is tin. So a lot of times you hear people saying there's 10,000 years worth of thorium on planet Earth. That's a very conservative number. And what they mean by that is that there's so much energy available inside a thorium atom, let alone all the other incredible things you can do with it, like super catalysts, super alloys, the highest temperature ceramics, the clearest optic glass, the, you know, a precursor to superconductors and the best nuclear medicines ever devised. You know, it's 6 million times more energy dense than coal. And so there's, you know, it's just when you read about things like that, you're just like, wow, we were given this incredible material that's also incredibly easy to handle because it's just a mild alpha emitter. Its beta decay is very small. Its gamma decay is incredibly small. And so it's a nuclear fuel that you could keep in your pocket. You know, it's an incredibly safe material to handle. You know, I don't know if I'm speaking on too long, but I got to tell you, there's a lot of, you know, that we just scratched the surface as to what, you know, the not just the fuel, but all the incredible applications for thorium are very inspiring. And that's why we're still at it after all these years.
It would have to be a passion project at this point, wouldn't it, after decades of devoting yourself to this. So I am very pleased to hear about all of those ideas and uses for thorium. But since it is the Thorium Energy Alliance, why don't we start drilling down on thorium energy? Just first of all. And so let's frame this in the context of a recent series of reports that were released earlier this year. For example, Popular Mechanics had a thorium reactor in the middle of the desert has rewritten the rules of nuclear power, which talks about in the remote expanse of the Gobi Desert stands the first thorium reactor ever built. Last year, researchers from the Chinese Academy of Sciences showed that this 2-megawatt reactor could power up and operate without a glitch, and they have now achieved another first, successfully reloading it while it was still running. All right, can you put some context to this story? Is this the first thorium reactor ever built, and is this a major breakthrough that we're looking at here?
It's the first liquid-fueled thorium reactor. There's been a lot of thorium in the shipping port reactor in Pennsylvania back, you know, 60 years ago, ran on a load of thorium and U-233. And one of the real amazing things about that is it was a breeder, you know, that fuel bred more fuel than it used. So at the end of its life, there was about 3% more fuel than when it started. So it was a really successful test of the shipping port, and the shipping port reactor proved all sorts of stuff about nuclear fuel. So more current CANDU reactors that are made to run on natural uranium, they actually have proven that the thorium as part of their fuel makeup is very, very good. And so now, years later, there's a company called CleanCore Thorium Energy that just got a license to sell their anneal fuel after passing years of fuel qualification. And so our friends in Canada and Argentina and around the world that have CANDU reactors are going to be able to use this thorium fuel. Well, it has 7 times the burn-up, which means that it's much smaller footprint for waste. It doesn't have the same footprint of plutonium. The natural uranium reactors create a lot of plutonium issues. And so the Chinese, though, got to be commended absolutely that the LF1, their molten salt reactor that they're running with thorium fuel, is a huge achievement. We ran the molten salt reactor experiment here in the United States, but it got shut down before they could run it on thorium. They were working their way up. They had uranium-235, and then they tried uranium-233, and then the next thing was going to be thorium. But to Alvin Weinberg's big regret, they never got to actually run it on the thorium fuel cycle. So the Chinese have finally achieved that.
So I believe the context that we were last talking back in 2012 was obviously shortly after Fukushima and the obvious problems with the uranium reactors that exist as part of the infrastructure right now. And we were talking about the benefits of thorium, including the built-in safety elements of a thorium-based liquid fuel reactor. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I do like to be very straight and say that, like, the fuel and the reactor are two separate technologies. Now, the thorium fuel is an incredibly safe fuel in its own right, and the molten salt reactor architecture is also safe. So when you put those two together, you get a very, very, very high safety profile. And so, yes, the idea about a molten salt reactor, like a light water reactor, you're constantly fiddling with fuel assemblies and control rods to try and keep it from running out of control, right? You're always trying to keep a light water reactor under control, where a molten salt reactor is kind of a lazy reactor in that it runs at a very high temperature, 580, 600 degrees Celsius, but it doesn't want to run. So you're constantly having to add a little more fuel. You're constantly trying to keep the foot on the accelerator. And if you ever stop, so it's got a built-in dead man switch. So if you ever, like, take your foot off the accelerator, the reactor just coasts, sort of, it's a bouncing coast. It gets a little hot, and when it gets hot, the atoms expand in the fuel salt. And when they expand, the cross section gets too big for it to react. So it cools. When it cools, they come together and they sort of, bounce their way down to being frozen, even if just nobody's doing anything. So that's the beautiful. And that's where the term walk away safe actually came from, was the proven characteristic that molten salt reactors can do what's known as load following. And so when you have your foot on the gas all the way down on a molten salt reactor, and in comes, somebody suddenly turns on an iron foundry and a huge call for electricity comes out, it would actually cool the salt because they've actually drawn so much energy out of it. And when it cools the salt, it becomes more energetic. And so it rises up to meet the demand. And if that foundry turns off or that cement factory turns off, the salt is making more heat than it needs. It actually gets a little warm. It expands and comes back down on its own. So you're not actively, like a light water reactor, sitting there with a lever, like riding up and down, trying to predict the energy loads at any one minute. The liquid salts are actually doing that automatically and inherently. It's really it's called a physics safe reactor because the actual physics of the salt define its safety profile. So it's, there's nothing man-made about it. A solenoid can't jam, the pumps, if the pumps fail, then it gets too hot and it shuts down. It's a beautiful machine.
It's truly absolutely fantastic to hear about and raises a number of questions. But before we get to those questions, let's talk about some of the other uses for thorium. You were starting to expand on that. Why don't you go into some more about what thorium can be used for other than reactors?
I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. It's really, like, fuel is super exciting, but some of these other applications, the more you learn about it, the more you learn about what thorium was used for up until the late 90s was so inspiring. So if for instance, you can still to this day buy thoriated tungsten for welding, right? And we would not have jet fighters or spacecraft. We wouldn't have any of that if it weren't for these thoriated welding rods. They're trying to replace them or upgrade them with different rare earth welding rods. But let me tell you, we're not having that great a time finding rare earths, period. So, it would be nice to be able to keep making thoriated welding rods in the West. But things like microwave ovens to radar systems work way better with thorium. Some of the most exciting thing are catalysts. So Dow used to make a catalyst for cracking natural gas into ethylene plastic. W.R. Grace also made a very similar catalyst system. So it's like a catalytic converter, but for a petroleum factory. The American Petroleum Institute has a catalyst research. So instead of using cerium, which is right above thorium in the periodic table. Thorium is even better and has more atoms to give up as a catalyst. And then, you know, you get the highest temperature ceramic ever devised was called thoria. Some of the people out there might know, might remember from their science class, alumina is a very high temperature ceramic. So now you got thoria, and thoria is hugely high temperature. So now you got crucibles that you can only get in Russia today, you know, and we're trying to bring them back to the United States because those are the crucibles in which you can make super alloys, like the most high temperature. What are you going to melt them in? So you need this thoria ceramic. It's a gift. And the clearest optics ever devised, the least refracting optics, the least distorting optics ever made were thoriated glass. And so we used those optics for decades. And then we sort of in the late 90s, we stopped using them for really misguided and overwrought reasons about, you know, very mild radioactive signature. And, you know, I could go on. I think most exciting to a lot of people are the number one prostate cancer drug is actinium-225. There's another cancer drug called bismuth-213. And that's the only way you're going to get those cancer drugs is by milking thorium. And that's a process. You can look it up, milking thorium. It was perfected at Oak Ridge National Lab. And TerraPower, Bill Gates's company, is trying to develop a thorium milking operation. Shine Medical near me in Wisconsin has a milking operation for. And so now, when you look into the success rates, you have people with very, very late stage prostate, you know, systemic cancer throughout their bodies. And I won't get too deep into it, but prostate cancer is very highly, you can put biomarkers that track the cancer very accurately. And they, you know, like a PSA test. And those cancers, when you put the trackers and combine them with a little bit of actinium, they go and they attack the cancers and leave all the healthy tissue alone. It's miraculous to see some of this stuff. You know, people with, like, you know, inches away from, you know, going to see the other side of the Rainbow Bridge, that, you know, they're brought back to life, you know. And so that's miraculous. The superconducting nature, I mean, if we run out of time, I'll bore you. I'll rattle off a list of stuff. But it's not boring. It's the most exciting. It's so sad to me that we left this technology sitting on the cutting room floor for the last 30 years.
Well, you know, or more. That gets to the heart of the questions that I started to have earlier, but it just, you're renewing them. Russia and China, why has America fallen behind on this? It seems to me that if there is obvious medical and economic and fuel benefits to this element, then why is it not being used more frequently?
Well, I think that the least conspiratorial thing you could say would be the United States and the Western world started using uranium, and so they just kept using uranium. And then when people wanted to study thorium, it used to be a specific prohibition in the Department of Energy. So that's like one of our big successes, is we've had that essentially repealed. It used to be specific. It used to be one of the things that you specifically could not do work on was thorium and thorium fuel and thorium materials. And finally, they understood the hypocrisy of that, because with the old prohibition against working with those materials, you had a circular logic, right? Why can't you work on them? Because nobody works on them. Oh, well, then we don't want you working on them. It's like, well, we don't work on them because we can't get funding to work on them. It's like, well, that's because nobody works on them, you know. And they, you know, we would point that out over and over to staff. And they finally, you know, there's finally some advocates for thorium bubbled their way up high enough in the Department of Energy food chain. And we got some senators like Senator Tommy Tuberville to like really put the screws on the Department of Energy to say, why are you ignoring this material? And so they finally realized, well, it is a hypocritical inconsistency, and there's some political leverage now being put on us. So we had Cory Booker put a lot of pressure. So if you go from Tommy Tuberville to Cory Booker, this is a very bipartisan issue when it comes to policy. And that, you know, so that's what's nice about it. You know, we have friends everywhere because they understand all boats are going to rise with this tide.
You know, I appreciate you putting it in the least conspiratorial terms, but this is the Corbett Report, so you can put it in the most conspiratorial terms. Why would the Department of Energy have specific prohibitions against the use of thorium? What benefit to what sector or what political clique would be interested in that?
Well, I mean, the I mean, the industry, the government, you know, all the folks that have worked in this area, they invested billions of dollars to set up an entire uranium based fuel cycle, and so it was totally in their interest to just, you know, keep using that one thing. You know, it'd be like inventing gasoline and knowing there's stuff called diesel out there and saying, no, we can run everything on gasoline. And, you know, technically you could, you know, but diesel has some of its own properties that, you know, there's appropriate use for everything. And so
the way that I have put this in the past was that this was part of Admiral Rickover's nuclear Navy project, and that part of the reason for choosing U-235 was because of the U-238 byproduct and the nuclear program. Am I off base on that?
If I heard you right, it sounds about right. I mean, the U-235 is the nuclear fuel, right? That's what really makes the fuel the fuel. I mean, you can use natural uranium and then, you know, naturally occurring radioactive material. But that's where you get this is where I'm like, I don't know who's making the call here, but when we got out of processing rare earths, so this is where, you know, I'll start talking about rare earths a little bit. You don't find thorium if you don't find rare earths, and vice versa. You don't find rare earths if you don't get thorium. You know, they're mineralized together. They rare earths are almost always found in a phosphate mineral. You know, vast majority of rare earths, especially the heavy rare earths, are found in things like monazite, bassesite, apatite, xenotime. And these are all phosphate minerals. And, you know, starting in the 80s, we started getting out of that business. And that's because Ronald Reagan and the Department of Energy started putting bigger and bigger strictures on using slightly radioactive, naturally occurring radioactive materials. And it just, over time, it just got to be such a pain in the ass economically. And then activists started saying, oh, you know, you got some radioactive material inside your tailings, you know, and so the hammer would come down on that. And so that's why basically the United States and Europe and even Japan stopped making rare earths and handed that entire business over to China. But when they handed that entire business over to China, they basically were also giving up on thorium. And so that's why it's astoundingly difficult for, as available as thorium is in the earth's crust and mantle, you know, more than gold, more than tin, more than lead, you know, it's theoretically a common material, but it's astounding. It's a very uncommon thing to try and get your hands on. And now that Russia's at war and China's, you know, our economic adversary, you know, good luck. You know, I just got back from Washington, D.C., and I had a bunch of people come up to me and said, boy, we're really looking to examine how thorium could work with our, you know, our fuel. And it's like, all right. hey, if you find some, let me know. I'm the head of the Thorium Energy Alliance, and I can't find it. And we've literally been around the world looking for it. And, I mean, we know where it is. You know, it's United States, India, Brazil. It's everywhere. But what people are talking about is metallic thorium. Somebody processed it? And so that's our entire – I'm wandering off the reservation here a little bit on you. But I mean, our entire effort these days is to stand up a thorium bank, a thorium facility that refines thorium. And it's completely a side stream byproduct to a rare earth processing facility that's getting built in Missouri. And so unless you acknowledge and have a plan and process, or at the very least, you know, have a plan for, you know, disposing of actinides, there is no rare earth solution in the United States, right? And you've had a bunch of announcements in the last 24 hours. Oh, we got a new rare earth deal with China. We got another rare earth deal with Australia. We got another rare earth deal with Malaysia. We got a rare earth deal with Burma and Greenland. And it's like, well, you know, I'm agnostic. If you can get it, get it. But to me, rare earths don't mean nothing unless you're talking about metals and magnets. And right now, 100%. Not 80, not 90, not 91, 100% of all usable high-temperature magnets come from China. And those are the magnets that we most need for our military and space programs. You know, the things like earphones and, you know, computer monitors and stuff like that. You know, we can get away with less high-quality magnets and materials. But if you want to have an F-35 fighter jet, you need the best materials, and it's one-stop shopping for that. And we need to, you know, resolve that issue or give up.
Yes. Well, just as I don't think the U-235 as the basis for the nuclear reactors was a decision that was just made out of ignorance, I think it was deliberately made as part of, obviously, the nuclear weapons program. So, too, do I think that the offshoring of America's industrial capacity and its rare earth processing and all of this has been part of a deliberate strategy that has undermined the United States. And there's a lot more to be said about that. But however it happened, as you say, the tide is starting to change and people are starting to realize that there may be some benefit in this. So I would love to hear about the Thorium Energy Alliance, your initiatives, what you were doing in Washington, anything you can tell us about this change that's taking place.
Sure. Oh, you know, we're very open. We're a 501c3 registered IRS nonprofit research and development group. We fund a tremendous amount of research every year. We obviously are funding the development of this thorium processing facility and basically a strategic supply of thorium. And part of the process, just a little sidebar, you know, because we're getting this from rare earths, we generate a lot of fluorine gas. And the fluorine gas is an incredibly important part of the integrated circuit industry. And so we're building these big chip fabs in Pennsylvania and Arizona. And let me tell you, there's, you know, fluorine, it comes from one place basically. And I'll give you a multiple choice quiz later. It's going to be the same answer every time, you know, where do we get fluorine? You know, China. Where do we get rare earths? China. You know, I start to sound like a broken record. And I should also say, people are like, you know, what's your problem with that? I'm like, I don't have a problem per se. I just think we should be doing it ourselves. You know, it's that simple. You know, I just think, you know, if we're going to use it, we should make it. Anywho, I don't disagree with you, by the way, that, you know, it was a very, maybe more than the fuel, it was a very conscious decision to give up making rare earth materials. There was rhodia in France. Japan had world-class rare earth facilities. We had some of the best rare earth metals and separations and phosphors and garnets and, you know, that we were China. And as soon as it got to be a little bit difficult, we said, hey, you guys do that. You know, you guys like dirty industries. And so we basically told these Chinese that they could have this dirty industry as long as they gave us the byproducts of it. And it, you know, you could say, well, it served us well for 30 years, but not too much recently, you know. And now we're over a barrel of this stuff. Anywho, so the Thorium Energy Alliance primary goal right now, you could say, you know, working your way from the top of the pyramid, is we want to be the Western world supplier of thorium. We want to create markets for thorium, and we're agnostic as to what you want to do with it. You know, we're not making thorium fuel. We make thorium nitrate, thorium oxide, thorium tetrafluoride, and thorium metal. And thorium metal is used in medical devices. Thorium tetrafluoride is used by all sorts of folks, but commonly companies like Copenhagen Atomics want to incorporate it in their fuel. Thorium oxide is the sort of thing that Clean Core Thorium Energy wants, but other industries want thorium oxide also. Thorium nitrate is the sort of thing you make catalysts out of, and we have several companies that are developing thorium catalysts and thorium alloys, even thoriated magnets, thoriated superconductors. And so it's very focused on just a few things. We're actually organized as a public benefits company, so we act like a utility. But like a utility, we can have investors, we can distribute stock, we can distribute excess earnings or profits, what have you. So it's a for-profit company, but it's organized as if it's a utility with a very, very narrow scope of what we're offering. And we're supplying the water. What do you do with the water? I don't know. Do you make soda pop with it, or do you make iron with it? You know, like, you know, it's like we're the utility that supplies the raw material. If you're the company that's going to make fuel with it, that's great. We support that. If you're the company that's going to make cancer drugs with it, we support that too. And so that's the main thing that Thorium Energy Alliance has been focused on, is trying to create markets for thorium so that we can revive this general class of material and show the world that it's indeed a super critical material to the future of humanity. If you want to put 8, 9, 10 billion people on this planet, we better start using thorium, let me tell you. You know.
All right. Well, as you say, and as I now understand, we could talk about this for hours, I'm sure, and still only barely scratch the surface of this topic. But in the interest of respecting our listeners' time and attention, for people who are interested, where can they go to learn more about thorium?
So the Thorium Energy Alliance website is just thoriumenergyalliance.com or thoriumenergyalliance.org. We're working on a very basic website for Thorium Products Corporation. World Nuclear Association has very good resources. So if you're like, I don't trust that John guy, I want an independent source. WNA has very good resources. The International Atomic Energy, IAEA, has very good resources. ANS has been very level, you know, even-handed and level-headed about the opportunities that thorium can represent. NEI just supported a bunch of work. And I should say, last week we were in Washington, D.C., and Thorium Products Corporation, our for-profit spin-out from Thorium Energy Alliance. So Thorium Products Corporation was very generously allowed to participate in the Defense Production Act Nuclear Fuels Consortium. And you can imagine it's very uranium-centric, but they had guys there talking about thorium, not just me. They had folks talking about plutonium. They had folks talking about spent nuclear fuel and recycled nuclear fuel. And so what the DPA allows is for all these different players from Centris to BWXT to Orano to Thorium Products Corp, we can all discuss like what the future needs are going to be and how to supply them and maybe share resources, you know, without people saying we're colluding or anything like that. It's basically an industry association that allows for the United States and the Western world to benefit from working together. And hopefully it gets the United States back into the nuclear business. You know, Rosatom from Russia and CCSEO from China is, you know, they're going around the world, you know, basically giving away reactors or, you know, selling them at cost, because once you build a reactor somewhere, you got that country on the hook for the next century. Right. You know, so of course Russia wants to put reactors in Egypt and South Africa and all over. Of course China wants to give away reactors because it's the original Atoms for Peace. It's diplomacy through energy. And if you're a poor country, you know, you'd be doing your people a disservice. Are you going to burn coal? Are you going to burn your forest? Or are you going to burn a few atoms? You know, and it's, you know, so it's we need to get back in that business. Because, just for the sake of international balance and peace, you know, we need to be able to offer the world a Western resource that they can rely on, you know.
Amen. After decades of enforced energy poverty in the mindset of the eco-activists who want us all to live in hovels and, you know,
existence from the earth. Yeah, you'll have nothing.
It's good to think of the expansion of those ideas and hopefully getting energy, which is the fundamental part of human society and civilization, back front and center.
Energy is prosperity, man. You know, and if you're of the mindset that you want, I got an electric car. You know, if you want an electric car and an electric heat pump and electric water heater and, you know, a furnace and a dryer and, you know, hair dryers and computers and all this stuff, you know, what are you going to run it on? You know, you're not going to run it on solar. You're not going to run it on wind. I don't, you know, that's, you know, happy thoughts and good wishes. And batteries are a crime against nature. You know, that's the most inefficient way to, like, you know, batteries don't create energy, right? They store it, and they store it very inefficiently, like 10% efficient tops. You know, so it's like we need 24, just ask Spain, right? We need rotational generation, because only rotational generation can absorb hits. You know, so when everybody turns their air conditioners on at once, batteries and solar and wind can't handle demands for load. And it's too hard to spin up natural gas. And it's, you know, like, you need load following spinning generation. And even Texas, I was just at the Texas Nuclear Summit, and even Texas admits they don't have enough spinning generation right now. And so energy is prosperity. Energy is abundance. Energy is life, you know. And if we can, you know, I'm happy to help people drive their electric cars and use their heat pumps. Because, you know, you're going to damn the poor to being energy poor forever. If you make them get their energy from solar, they're just going to be poor. You know, if you demand that the poor of Africa get their energy from wind, you know, or whatever, wind, wave energy, solar, you know, batteries, you're just damning them to every 5 or 6 years having to replace everything. You know, maybe at best something lasts 20 years, but the fact is a good nuclear power plant can last a century, you know, and it's 95-98% efficient. And then you use thorium, you know, so now you use thorium, you don't have the waste profile that everybody cries and whines about, and you have all the material aspects and material opportunities that thorium represents. You know, superconducting transmission cables, cancer medicines, ceramics. I mean, it's a beautiful, you know, virtuous cycle that we could make life better for a lot of people. And I don't want to get religious on you, but, you know, I'm not religious at all. really, but like I do like a little parable. You know, this rock, this phosphate rock has all the phosphate for fertilizer in it. It's got all the thorium and uranium for energy in it. And it's got all the critical materials like rare earths and cobalt in it. And like somebody, we threw this rock away, right? And now we can make this rock the cornerstone of a future of energy and abundance and prosperity. So the rock that was rejected is now the rock that's become the cornerstone. You know, the religious people love that analogy, but you know, it's true. You know, it's become true. You know, we need to start thinking holistically about how to use these materials. And thorium is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, there's so many things we can do.
Well, as I say, I think people have been engineered into a mindset of energy poverty and accepting that we will be eating bugs and living off of rainwater. But I think we can do more, we can do better. And I hope that at the very least, people will start taking a look into this. So once again, let's direct people to thoriumenergyalliance.com and its associated resources so they can find out more about this. And hopefully we can move forward as a civilization with abundance and prosperity. So on that note, I think we'll leave it there. John Kutch, thank you very much for your time tonight.
I'm very grateful for the opportunity to speak to your audience. I hope a lot comes from this, and you are highly commended for following up after all this time with where we're at. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Computer whiz kid.
Part of your genius is that you are a computer whiz.
Cutthroat businessman.
The U.S. Justice Department contended that the software giant had breached antitrust laws.
Selfless philanthropist.
Bill, even your harshest critic would have to admit that your philanthropy work is, you know, planet-shaking, incredible.
Ruthless eugenicist.
But that's called the death panel, and you're not supposed to have that discussion.
As more and more of our world is coming to rely on Bill Gates for his guidance,
one of the best informed voices is that of businessman and philanthropist Bill Gates.
It is time to ask what really lies behind Gates' quest for control.
Things won't go back to truly normal until we have a vaccine that we've gotten out to basically the entire world.
It is time to ask, who is Bill Gates? Watch the complete documentary for free at corporatereport.com/gates. Or support the work and purchase a DVD copy at newworldnextweek.com.